What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and powder your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat knows. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Good evening, and welcome to Health Matters. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz, and I'll be your host as we talk about pet health tonight with Dr. April Mackey, veterinarian at Town South Animal Hospital in Shreveport. You may recognize this song as being Tom Jones' What's New Pussycat, and this is a change from our usual Health Matters theme song because we are taking a break from our usual programming where we talk about health and health matters that affect human beings, and we are now focusing on our pets, our four-legged and sometimes two-legged friends, or I guess eight if you have a spider.
Yeah, somebody right out there probably does.
Yeah. So why are we talking about pet health on Health Matters today? Well, the reason is because, according to the SPCA, as much as 44% of households in the United States own dogs and 35% own cats. That translates into over 78 million dogs and 85 million cats living in U.S. households. So they're an important part of our families. And, you know, our pets can affect our emotional and physical health, so we certainly want to keep them healthy and happy as well. Particularly in the springtime, when we get a welcome reprieve from the winter cold, we have to also concern ourselves with some of the issues that not only affect people, but their pets as well. And tonight, we're going to talk about some of those health conditions that affect our pets, particularly in the spring. This, again, is a call-in show. Each week, I mention that. And for those tuning in for the first time, we certainly would welcome your comments, questions, and even an impersonation of your pet. And you can call in those questions at 1-800-552-8502. So, Dr. Mackey, thank you again for being here this evening. Now, you practice, you're a veterinarian, you practice here in the Shreveport area?
Yep, right down the road at Town South Animal Hospital.
Fantastic. So, to start off, how does one select a pet for their family?
So, I think it's going to be very variable on what your family is. If you have lots of kids, no kids, if you're older or younger, you know, an average family with two small children would want to pick a golden retriever or something like that that's super social and happy and good with the kids, versus an older couple would prefer a cat that's not as much work. And I am always a proponent for, you know, rescuing animals from your local shelters or from rescue organizations, you know, getting a nice, just good mixed breed pet is always, always a good option.
And where can you get those animals?
There's so many different rescues out there. Locally, one of my head nurses has a rescue organization that she fosters pets and then adopts them out every weekend. Partnership for Pets is her organization. There's literally dozens of them locally that are rescue organizations. Then, of course, your local animal controls always have adoption days and things like that where you can adopt dogs or cats anytime.
So is there something you should look for in terms of when you evaluate an animal?
So I think if you adopt an animal, it's always important to get a wellness checkup with your veterinarian. And a lot of the adoption agencies recommend that. So then you can test them for heartworm disease and just do a general wellness checkup and test them for intestinal parasites and things like that. Because a lot of animals, especially at animal control facilities, are exposed to a lot. So they can have upper respiratory disease that goes unnoticed until they get adopted. And so I do think just a general wellness checkup is super important after you do an adoption. And a lot of the rescue organizations require that, to go immediately within a certain period of time and go get a wellness check with your veterinarian.
Okay, and if you get an animal from a breeder, Should you do the same thing?
Absolutely. And that's the thing I tell people all the time. No matter if you pay a $50 adoption fee or a $5,500 English bulldog, they're still going to potentially have issues that puppies a lot of times have, intestinal parasites, breathing problems. And so I, to be honest, see more positive intestinal parasite issues from breeders than I do from a lot of the animal controls. It's just, it's almost a daycare facility. There's lots of dogs in a small area. And so you can catch, you know, upper respiratory and other intestinal diseases from breeders as well.
Okay. So it sounds important to have your pet checked out before, I guess, you...
I'm always going to recommend you come see me.
Sure. Now, I would imagine you need to do this before your child falls in love with the animal.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Okay, very good. Okay, so you bring you bring your pet home, and just for argument's sake, this is a dog, because we're going to talk about training, and I guess training a dog is much easier than training a cat. It seems like...
Yeah, definitely.
Cats typically train their owners where the dogs can be trained. So... So how would someone go about training their dog?
I think it's important to start really young, especially if you get a puppy, which I think for the most part, that's the most common pet that is acquired. You know, if you get a dog, you get a young dog. You have to start young. You have to be diligent in your training. And, you know, some people, once these puppies are up to date on their puppy shots, they can go to actual training facilities and get obedience training. And you know, Petco, PetSmart, those stores have good little training, you know, classes that they can take. But even at home, it's persistence, it's positive reinforcement, you know, to sit, to stay. You use the little puppy training treats and other, also when you're training them for potty training, you know, I tell people all the time, you've got to be consistent, you've got to have positive reinforcement and also negative reinforcement. You know, if they're not doing what you ask, you let them know with the sound of your voice, and those guys are smart. They can catch on really, really quickly. And it's, most dogs are very trainable. Now, if you ask my husband, the four that live at my house aren't really all that trained, and that's probably my fault because I wasn't very diligent in training them. Do as I say, not as I do.
Now, what if you come upon a mess that your dog has made, but it may have occurred sometime earlier, whether it be, you know, minutes or hours, right, or many hours, you know, what do you do at that point?
Well, and this is what I tell my clients. If you catch them in the act, then it's fair to reprimand them. And I say reprimand them in the form of a strong voice. You know, I'm not a proponent of any spanking or anything like that. But if you step in it 2 hours later, it's not really, they don't remember. Their memory at that age is not going to be that long, and it's not really fair to fuss at them, you know, at that point. At that point, you clean up your mess and start fresh. But if you do catch them in the act, then absolutely, you know, then they realize, okay, I'm not supposed to do this on mom's carpet. And the other thing with puppies, you've got to take them outside so often. Their little bladders are so small, and they, after they eat, there is a reflex in the stomach that tells the colon, hey, I gotta go. And it usually is about 30 minutes after they eat. And so after you feed your pup, spend some time outside with them, so then they get that that's where they need to go.
Now, what about the older dogs? How long is their memory?
It's going to vary so much by breed. There are so many dogs that are super smart. Your standard poodles, your golden retrievers, these dogs are brilliant dogs, and their memories are crazy. I mean, it's just amazing with things that they can remember, things that you can train them to do. But there are definitely some breeds out there that you wonder how they remember to get up in the morning.
Yeah, in my own experience, sometimes it seems as though the dog may misbehave if it's upset about something, like if, you know, we went out for too long or didn't take her for a walk when we all went for a walk without her, and then she'll sort of punish us by like tearing up a pillow. But what'll happen is we'll come back in and it may have been like an hour or more, but she knows. She knows what you, and as soon as we walk in, she heads straight to her kennel.
That
because
guilty
she knows
face.
She knows.
I've come home to that guilty face a few times, and then I always found something chewed up, or my chihuahua likes to eat socks and then throw them up on my pillow. So those things definitely have the guilty face, though, for sure.
So when it comes to chewing at home, are there certain things that you should be concerned about if you find that your dog has gotten into and started chewing, or things around the home that are potentially dangerous for the dogs?
So there are definitely things around the home that are potentially dangerous. And for chewing specifically, I would say if they chew things up that are big enough that can cause foreign body obstructions and things like that, we definitely worry about that. Like my own Chihuahua, I couldn't believe she ate a whole sock and then puked it up. Thank God she vomited it up or we would have been in trouble. Electrical cords are always an issue with cats specifically. Christmas tree lights, you know, those things can pose a danger specifically with chewing. But around the house, there are a whole lot of other toxins that a lot of people don't know about. Things in the kitchen, chocolate toxicity, dark chocolate toxicity can definitely cause some issues in small dogs specifically, because it doesn't take much to cause a toxic level. A lot of people don't know that grapes and raisins are very toxic to dogs, and we call it an idiosyncratic reaction, which means we don't really understand why. It can cause kidney failure in some dogs, even one grape. Some dogs can eat grapes all their lives and never have any issues, and so like I said, we use that big word idiosyncratic because we just hadn't figured out why. But it's pretty scary because you don't know what dog's going to be affected and what dog's not. And I've definitely seen kidney failure from grape ingestion, but I've also seen plenty of dogs that I've treated symptomatically and they've done very, very well.
So what sort of signs would you look for if you were, you know, to suspect that your dog had ingested something that perhaps was not good for them?
So it's going to kind of depend. Like the grape toxicity, what's really kind of stinks about that, once they're clinical or sick with it, they're usually already in kidney failure. And so that's why it's important to know, so you don't feed those things, or if your dog accidentally ingests it, then you can come in and induce vomiting if it's soon enough. The other thing that is super important to know, and a lot of people don't know this, sugar-free gum is very toxic to dogs. A lot of those gums have xylitol in them, and xylitol is not toxic to people at all. A lot of medications actually have xylitol in it and for people, but for dogs, for whatever reason, they metabolize it very differently, and it causes severe hypoglycemia, and dogs can have seizures and really get sick from just a small amount of sugar-free gum that has xylitol, and like I said, most of them do.
Do you find around Halloween time that there's a problem with dogs getting into the chocolate?
Yeah, I definitely think... So after Christmas and after Thanksgiving, we see an increase of pancreatitis and upset tummy just from eating things that they shouldn't. But definitely in Halloween, we worry about those little dogs getting into the Halloween candy and having a party.
Gotcha. And so if you found your dog and was covered in chocolate and there was all this mess, and then what do you do? Do you rush to the vet?
Yeah, you know, it varies on the size of the dog and the darkness of the chocolate, but it's always a good idea to call and check in with your vet. And a lot of times we're able to calculate, you know, the toxicity by knowing what the chocolate is and how big the dog is. But a lot of times it is recommended, if it happened recently within the last several hours, that we recommend inducing vomiting and sometimes activated charcoal as well to slow down the absorption and decrease the toxic effects.
Gotcha. So we need to keep these animals safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So now, so what is the best way to keep your animals safe? What kind of plan should someone follow?
So I think a couple of things, especially in the springtime, if you're thinking about planting new plants and you're putting out different poisons because all the furry critters are out, there's definitely some significant toxicities with things like snail baits. Rat poison is always a big problem in dogs, and you know, a lot of outside plants. There's not a lot of toxic plants, but the ones that are toxic are super toxic. Something that a lot of people plant around here, sago palm. Sago palm are those little short palms that everybody has. They're beautiful little plants, but they are super, super toxic, super liver toxicity in dogs. And these dogs will die from small ingestions of sago palm. And they don't really taste great, so a lot of dogs don't mess with them. But I tell people, if you've got a sago palm and you've got a dog, dig it up. It is not safe.
Really?
Yeah, they're really toxic, and those dogs get so sick.
They don't typically go and chew on them, though, do
they? They don't, but what stinks, the female plant, and I'm definitely no biologist or plant person, but the female plants, they have a seed that they give off during maturity, and the little seed pods are super toxic, and if the dog even just licks one of those seed pods, they can have some significant toxicity. So it still is a pretty scary plant, definitely.
Yeah. We welcome your calls and your comments. 1-800 552-8502. And when you call, you're certainly welcome to do an impersonation of your dog. I have a couple yellow labs at home, and I did my own impersonation. I want to let our listeners hear my best rendition of our yellow labs. I've been practicing all week. So let's talk a little bit about wellness exams. What exactly are wellness exams?
So wellness exams in veterinary medicine, I think, is something that's really important, because with dogs and cats specifically, they don't tell you when they don't feel very well, versus kids or your spouse, you know, they tell you when their back hurts or their tummy hurts. And when we catch things on wellness exams, weight gain, or the owner mentions they're drinking more, or their appetite's a little decreased, or a little weight loss, and these are things that the owners barely notice, but as us as medical professionals, we can take a look and say, hey, you know, 6 months ago, this dog weighed 4 pounds less or 4 pounds more. And, you know, we're concerned about weight gain or weight loss. And the thing about it, if you catch disease early in dogs and cats, I tell people this every day, if I can catch something early on wellness blood work and be able to, it's so much more treatable. Kidney disease, diabetes, things like that, that are caught before these animals are clinically sick, it makes my job a whole lot easier and things are a whole lot more treatable if we can catch these things on wellness exams. And the other thing, like, this is a hot topic all the time in veterinary medicine, is weight control. And I think the majority of our dog population specifically is overweight or even borderline obese. And these are things that owners don't see because they're with their pets every day. And it really is a hot topic or a soapbox of mine that it's so important to keep these guys at a good weight. You know, I was just reading a study yesterday, specifically in Labrador retrievers, that if they are kept at an optimal weight throughout their entire life, there's a true research study out there that shows that they live on average 2 years longer just by keeping them at optimal weight. And as you know, Labradors like to eat, but it's really, really important to keep them at an optimal weight. And those are things that me as the veterinarian can fuss at you when I see you every 6 months for your wellness exams, that, man, hey, you know, Susie is 85 pounds. She was 75 the last time, and talk about foods and things like that and diet changes and exercise that we can do to keep these guys healthy.
So 2 years longer, what is that in people years?
So that would probably average 14 to 15 years longer in people years.
And,
so,
you know, the same holds true with humans.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right.
So now during these wellness visits, are you also performing any other preventative health?
So for us, specifically in Louisiana, things that we always are talking to our clients at wellness visits are heartworm prevention, flea prevention, and, you know, in older pets, we talk about arthritis and joint supplements and things like that. And I always, we recommend at Town South yearly blood screenings, even for young, healthy dogs, because, like I said, we can catch things earlier. And heartworm disease is an epidemic in Louisiana. Not a week goes by that I don't diagnose it. And it's such an important conversation to talk about preventatives. There's so many preventatives out there that are inexpensive and really, really work well.
What are the specific types of illnesses or diseases that you're looking to prevent, let's say, in the dogs?
So, okay, definitely heartworm. I think heartworm disease is probably number one, first and foremost. And then, of course, flea prevention is important. In cats, mainly, fleas can cause disease. They can cause some blood parasites and anemias in cats. In dogs, they're more of a nuisance or a burden. They can cause some tapeworm parasitism in dogs, but they're also are super gross to get in your house. And so we always talk about flea prevention and preventing that from getting in your house, in your yard. And again, there are great preventatives out there that are so easy to give these days. You know, I remember growing up in the 80s out in the country, you had fleas every summer and you just did it. It was nothing you could do about it. And now we're so lucky that we have preventatives and many, many different kinds in the forms of pills or topicals that last sometimes up to 3 months at a time that can prevent, you know, any kind of flea or tick infestation. And ticks definitely carry multiple diseases in dogs that can cause significant disease if they get bitten, you know, even one time.
And are there vaccines that you could use to prevent
I think we talked about this a little bit the last time I was there. It was a really hot topic when the last time I was here. I think that was July, maybe, I was here.
Yeah, last year.
There's definitely, so, and right now, this is something important to talk about for the springtime. There's a vaccine that we use. It's a combination vaccine, but it has the parvo vaccine. And the parvo vaccine works really, really well. And parvo is a disease that's so deadly in puppies. I just left the clinic, and Dr. Hunter was most likely diagnosing a very sick puppy with parvo when I was leaving the clinic today. And it's something that's more common in the springtime. It kind of, like the flu, it comes very seasonally in the springtime. Time is something that the time that we really see it, but the parvo vaccine works great, and it's so important to vaccinate your puppies against parvo. The other vaccines that are really important, and we talked about this last time, is the canine influenza. That's a new vaccine that not even a lot of veterinarians are recommending, but for us, we require it for boarding because it's a respiratory disease that is super contagious and can be very deadly. And there are now, since I talked to you, there's two variants of canine influenza now. There used to be just one variant. And now there's two variants, and so now we have a bivalent vaccine that has both variants in it in one vaccine. And it's not a common disease at all, but it's an up and coming disease, and in my opinion, something very worthy of vaccinating against for sure. Then our other part of our core vaccines is leptospirosis vaccine, especially in Louisiana. Leptospirosis is a zoonotic disease, meaning people can catch leptospirosis, and it is a disease of rodents and raccoons. And it is spread in the urine. And of course, in our wet environment, our dogs are always exposed to potential leptospirosis. So that's another one of our core vaccines that's really, really important.
And are there any concerns as far as giving vaccines to animals in terms of side effects or
Yeah, good question. So I think it's going to depend on the vaccine manufacturers and the types of vaccine that you give. And definitely there is a possibility with any vaccine of having an actual vaccine reaction. But for us, we choose very safe vaccines that are proven with very long research behind them that are minimum side effects and minimum reactions. And there are some dogs that we actually pre-treat prior to vaccines because we do see they have proven as puppies to have vaccine reactions where their little faces get swollen or they get hives. And so we pre-treat them with Benadryl or steroids. But for the most part, with our vaccines that we use, reactions are pretty minimal. Occasionally, these guys are sore the day after, and we can do some anti-inflammatories and things like that. But for the most part, vaccines are really, really safe and minimal side effects. And you know, in the human side, I know there's a lot of the anti-vacciners out there, but for us, the vaccines are way more important than any side effects that we have.
Okay. And you did mention heartworm.
Yeah. So heartworm is a disease that is transmitted by mosquitoes, right? And of course, here in Louisiana, that is something that we fight yearly. It's not even just a summer or springtime disease. Mosquitoes are year-round. And what happens, mosquitoes bite the dogs. They take a blood meal. And then they transmit the larva from the dog. And we call it the microfilaria that lives in the dog. And that swims in their bloodstream, and then it transfers from one larva to a different type of larva in the belly of the mosquito, actually, and then that mosquito bites another dog and injects that larva that then becomes an adult worm that lives in the heart and in the pulmonary artery of dogs. And dogs are the main reservoir for heartworm disease and heartworms. Cats can get heartworms, but the main culprit for heartworms and heartworm disease is dogs. And again, it's so preventable these days. There's an injectable medication that lasts for 6 months that can prevent the disease. There's multiple oral medications that you can give. And then what stinks is if it's left untreated and these guys get heartworms, if left untreated, these guys will go into heart failure and definitely can die from the side effects of being left untreated. Now, the good part is there's a great treatment protocol out there. We follow the American Heartworm Association's treatment protocol. It's a long process and it's not a cheap cheat process, but I've been 99.9% successful with my heartworm treatments that I've done. I've had one that was heartworm positive after we treated, but then 3 months later was heartworm negative.
And do you do that just for dogs or do you do for the cats
so,
too?
So good question. And cats, because it is not really a disease of cats, if cats were to get heartworms, there is actually not a treatment for heartworms. It is pretty much 100% deadly in cats. Now, again, super rare in cats. I've seen it just several times in my career in cats.
Okay.
And but there is a preventative for cats as well. So you can put these cats on preventative too.
You mentioned the mosquitoes. Can you use mosquito repellent on your dogs and cats?
So there are some approved products, but you have to be very careful because as we talked about a little bit earlier about toxicities and things like that, some of the mosquito repellents are going to be organophosphates or permethrins and things like that. And those are not safe for dogs. Now, there are some heartworm preventions that actually have mosquito repellent in them. There's a very specific heartworm prevention called Vectra that has actual mosquito repellent in it, which is super cool. That's one of the only products out there that has that. So, but you have to be pretty careful with the mosquito repellents because, again, you need to read the labels and make sure that they're safe for dogs because a lot of them can have some toxic issues.
Very good. If you'd like to call and ask Dr. Mackey a question regarding your pet, their health, preventative issues, or any other question related to pets, please call the number 800-552-8502.
Meow, 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 meow.
Okay, well, we've spent a lot of time talking about dogs, so let's switch over to cats for a few minutes. You did mention that some of these diseases can be spread to humans. I imagine heartworm disease. Does not. But what about toxoplasmosis?
So definitely, toxoplasmosis is a hot topic as well, and it gets complicated, truthfully, to talk about toxoplasmosis and cats. So most cats, if they've been outside, they've been exposed to toxoplasmosis, and toxoplasmosis is something that can be zoonotic, especially for pregnancy, and it can cause some abortions and things like that. But the timeline has to be very specific of when a cat has been exposed to toxoplasmosis and being able to be zoonotic to a pregnant female. That being said, we always recommend the ladies get out of litter box duty when they're pregnant, just to be on the safe side. Again, the likelihood of actually catching toxoplasmosis from your average house cat, it really isn't all that common, but it definitely is a possibility. So to err on the side of caution, a lot of ladies get out of the litter box duty when they're pregnant. And what's so funny is they tend to talk their husbands into sticking to litter box duty after they're not pregnant. So it's something that, ladies, it's something you can use your pregnancy for to get out of having to be on litter box duty.
But then your husband might get out of doing diaper duty. Said, "Oh, I got to go change the litter box."
Well, you know, my husband's lazy. We have an automatic litter box, so we don't have to scoop it at all.
That's what we do. So, what about other issues that cats may struggle with? You hear a lot about the urinary tract.
Yeah, so cats, definitely, there's a disease called feline lower urinary tract disease, or fluted as we call it. And it's related to several different issues in cats. We most often see it in overweight male cats. I think it's multiple causes and issues, but what happens, these inside lazy fat cats are too lazy to get up and use the litter box as they should, and cats are known for having over-concentrated urine, and that can be a little bit irritating to the bladder. And what can happen is these guys can get cystitis, which is just a fancy word for irritation of the bladder. And what stinks about the boy cats, and no offense to the boy cats, they're not all that well endowed, and that can lead to cystitis and inflammation in the bladder can lead to urethral blockages, which in male cats is probably one of the most important emergencies in male cats. These guys get where they are completely blocked and they cannot urinate at all, and they start basically going into kidney failure because the kidneys, they don't get the memo that they can't urinate, so the kidneys continue to make urine. And these are some of the sickest cats you'll ever see, and our fluted cats are definitely more prone to blockages because of this chronic inflammation. And a lot of times these cats will also have crystals in their urine because of a pH issue due to overconcentration. And something that's really important to tell people that their cats that struggle with that, stress sometimes can trigger this, but also, again, that overconcentration of their urine is a big trigger. And so making sure these guys are hydrated, making sure they eat wet food, which is really a rare recommendation for me. I am a proponent for dry kibble any day, all day, but these fluted cats, they need that wet food to help them drink more and pee more so they don't overconcentrate their urine. Diabetes is something we also see pretty commonly in kitty cats, especially, again, these overweight kitty cats. They're so lazy and they have a propensity to be overweight. And as in people, overweight cats are definitely more predisposed to becoming diabetics.
Now, you can take your dog for a walk. You can be more active with your dog. Restrict the food, what can you do with a cat?
So it's definitely limited. However, there are cats that can be harnessed and leash trained, and even just to have walks in the backyard. The other thing that a lot of people don't think about, use that laser pointer. Those guys, a lot of cats like to play with that laser pointer, and they make certain different toys and things like that that can get these guys a little bit of exercise, but it definitely is more difficult. And so with cats, I think it's more important to really control that food that they eat. And a lot of people are guilty. I'm guilty of it. With cats, we free feed them. We just kind of fill up the bowl and let them graze. And it can be problematic, though, if it starts to catch up with them and where you have to start doing timed feedings. But what's cool these days, they have these automatic feeders now, or you can set them timed to twice a day, quarter cup at 6:45 in the morning and 5:45 in the evening. So they get very specific amounts every day. And that can help, because the biggest complaint I have are people say, my cat's waking me up at 3 o'clock in the morning on my chest in the middle of the night on my bed, meowing because he's hungry, because he's on a diet. The other thing is there's really great high fiber diets that can help these guys. You do decrease the calories that they take by high fiber diets. And there's tons of good low calorie, high fiber diets out there, even over the counter.
So, since we're mentioning the types of foods that you feed your, and how often you feed your animals, there's just a slew of choices when it comes to animal food. The supermarkets are full of it. The television commercials are full of it. And even some boutique stores.
They're popping up every day.
Popping up everywhere. And some of that food just looks absolutely delicious. So what kind of food is best for your animal?
There are so many out there. And It's a hot topic. I tend to tell people there are a couple of things to steer away from. A very hot topic right now is a grain-free diet. So a lot of people are putting their pets on grain-free diets, and there's actually some early research that's coming out that actually grain-free diets can be problematic in dogs specifically. What's happening, they're replacing the grains, the corns, and things like that for some reason are the bad guys, when really in real life, guys, the corn is not a bad guy in dog and cat food. They're replacing it with potato starches or legumes, and we're having some taurine deficiency show up in some animals, and we're thinking that we're linking this to these grain-free diets. This is all really, really new and fresh, but there's some pretty good research out there that's kind of scary, that's related to causing some dilated cardiomyopathy, specifically in golden retrievers. But the grain-free diets, please still steer clear of. Dogs also gain weight typically on grain-free diets because they're replacing corn with things like potatoes that are typically more calorie dense. And grain-free is a fad, and it really, really is. It's a marketing ploy, in my opinion, and they just shouldn't even be out there. And I tell people, stick with the products that you know and love. Stick with the products that your veterinarian recommends, those products that have been around for a long time. They've been there for a long time for a reason. And it stinks because I can't remember the exact numbers, but there's somewhere around 3,000 new pet foods a year. I mean, it's crazy because I can't keep up with that, yeah. And the other thing for people to remember is to read the labels. There's somewhere on every pet food bag, there's something called an AFCO statement. And AFCO is the American Food Organization. And to be honest, it's a bit of an antiquated and old organization. But the statement from AFCO has to be on the bag of food. And that what I recommend is for people to look and see if this food has been formulated or made by a food trial, or is it just been formulated? And formulated sounds like a fancy word, but formulated, what that really means is just a recipe. And anybody can come up with a recipe and put it in a fancy bag. And it's really kind of scary that the regulations aren't as tight as they should be. And so read your labels and read your AFCO statements. If the dog food's based on food trials, that's great. That's a good food. If it's based on a formulation, that sometimes can be really scary, that there's not a lot of research behind what they're putting in that bag of food.
And your dog or cat does not need to go gluten-free, is what you're
saying. No gluten-free.
Okay.
Organic is not necessary either, guys. It's not needed.
Great. So we were saying that the animals don't need to be gluten-free. When do you know if you need to put your animal on a specific diet, not just a caloric restriction, but a, you know, let's say a specific diet that eliminates one thing or another?
Yeah, so there definitely are prescription diets that are commonly used. They're expensive because they're prescription diets, but there are diets out there specifically for dogs that have diabetes, specifically for cats that have kidney disease, for cats that have cystitis or urinary issues. There are hypoallergenic diets out there for dogs that have allergies, and food allergies are a thing in dogs. It's not super common, but it is something that we see. And so there's some novel protein diets that are out there specifically for dogs with food allergies, or some hypoallergenic diets that are out there. We also have prescription diet foods. There are definitely some certain foods out there that are very specific for very restricted calorie intake, but they're prescription diets. Let me think what else. There's also some brain diets out there that are prescription diets. There's some cognitive dysfunction diets out there that are pretty new, but pretty cool in the fact that they can help these older dogs with some senility problems.
I think we've got Angelo back. Angelo, you there?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes, I am.
Welcome to Health Matters.
Thank you.
What's your question for Dr. Mackey?
We have two small dogs. One is a Dachshund and one is a Terrier. And the Terrier is long-haired female, and the Dachshund's a female also. They're inside dogs, and that's where they stay. We've trained them to use the puppy pads, and of course we feed them and we give them their at the right weight and all. But my problem that I have with them is that I give them a bath, and I've been told to use Dawn detergent. I dilute it in water and I squirt it on them from that, and I give them a good bath and wash it completely off. There's no soap that comes off of them whenever I'm finished with them. I clean them up real good. And a female terrier, she actually scratches so much on her back, by her tail on the upper back part, that she pulls the hair out of her skin, and she doesn't. They don't have fleas because I checked the water, when they bathed, there's no fleas in it whatsoever. I was told that they might be mites that live on a dog, and to give them yogurt, feed them yogurt, they didn't say any kind of other dog detergent, but they said feed them yogurt, and that would help deter the mites, if that's what it is. So my question for the doctor is that after I give them a bath...
We just lost Angelo, but Angelo, you're welcome. You're still here. Okay, Angelo, we lost you a minute there. What was your question after taking giving the dog the bath?
What is causing them to scratch like they do and they have no fleas?
Tell me this: is it just during a certain time of the year, or is it year round?
It's year round.
So a couple of things, and not to bum you out about the flea problem. What you describe really, really makes me concerned that there may be even one or two fleas on these guys, because some dogs actually can be allergic to fleas, and so even one flea bite can cause these guys to be significantly pruritic and itch like crazy. And that area right at the tail head is classic flea bites or flea itching. And like you said, you don't see any fleas, and I believe you, man, 100%. But like I said, all it takes is one flea. I would be suspicious that they may have some fleas or flea allergies. Now, it could be also just some atopic allergies, and the atopic allergies can be seasonal or year-round depending on what they're allergic to. And so allergies are something I really wanted to talk about tonight, so I'm actually glad you called. Seasonal allergies are really bad right now. People are miserable with allergies right now, and dogs and cats as well, but mainly dogs really, really suffer this time of year from allergies. And so your guys may have some sort of allergy, but it's interesting to me that it's both of them that are itchy. I really would be suspicious of some fleas. Now, mites we occasionally see, most often in dogs, so the mites that I'm going to see are ear mites. And so those are very specifically located in the ears, and they really do itch, but it's mainly just in the ear. The mites on the body or on the tail head, I would be way more suspicious of a flea. And what I would do, if you have a regular veterinarian, go by there, ask them what their favorite flea preventative is, and just try a dose, for a month or two, and maybe that'll help kind of break the cycle. And again, you say you don't have fleas, and I'm not harping on the fleas to be in the bad guy for you, but the thing about fleas, they can live year-round in this environment, and once they get in your house and once they get in there in your yard, they can be really, really hard to get rid of, and they can be really sneaky. And so I'd be suspicious of some fleas or some other kind of allergens that these guys are having. And the good news about allergies, we're really spoiled these days in veterinary medicine. There's some amazing, really safe oral daily medication that these guys can take that really stop the inflammatory cycle that is allergies, and work amazingly well. We've had some dogs that have just been miserable for years and years, and we've got some relatively new products out there that can really help. So I would take a visit to your vet and let them just take a really good look. And what I do with these guys that I'm concerned about fleas, I have a flea comb, and so it's a very specific comb, and we'll comb those guys, and we may find just one flea on these guys, but if I find one flea, that is enough for me to be suspicious that there's more than one flea out there.
And thank you.
Does that hurt the dog?
No, and the truth is, in rescue organizations and situations like that, where you've got a lot of dogs and you're worried about fleas, we actually do say that Dawn is a very safe shampoo to actually try and get fleas off of them. For whatever reason, Dawn does have some properties to it that can help get fleas off these guys that are inundated with fleas. But the problem is, you use the Dawn bath, but then if they go back outside, or if the fleas are in your home or outside, they're just going to get them back on there. And so that's why having a monthly preventative on board would really, really help. So I don't think the Dawn hurts, but I worry, man, that you may actually have some sneaky fleas around there.
Yeah. Angela, thank you very much for your call. It's interesting watching you talk about fleas. Every time you mention fleas, Dr. Mackey, you start scratching yourself.
They gross me out so bad.
You say allergies, you're fine. But as soon as you mention the word flea, I've watched you scratch your head, you squat your arms.
I don't doubt it. They're so creepy.
It's funny.
They're so gross. And we see these guys just get completely inundated and just really overwhelmed with fleas. I've seen puppies truly get anemic from flea burdens. Yeah. I mean, they're true parasites.
We have another caller on the phone. This is
Thank you, callers.
Yeah. Dave from Texas. Dave, welcome to Health Matters.
Oh, hi. This is Dave. Back to your previous topic. I'm suffering a similar thing here. The thing is, I have dogs, and I'm able to control their flea problem. However, I also have a cat. And for some reason, and these guys all coexist very well, some reason I can knock the fleas out of dogs, but I can't get them off the cat. Any ideas?
So, you know, and I remember growing up, I grew up in the country, and like I mentioned earlier, we suffered every summer with fleas, and I remember I had this fancy Persian cat that I paid too much money for as a kid, but I really wanted him, and my mom always called him. He was such a flea bag, and he would have these fleas that they're ginormous, big, fat fleas on him, and the dogs, we'd get it under control with the dogs, and he would be just kind of the flea bag, as my mom would call him. And it's interesting that some fleas just like cats better for some reason. And I don't really know if there's science behind it. But the good news is in cats, there are some good products. There's not as many products for cats as there is dogs, but there's a product called Revolution that I really like, and they don't pay me any money. I'm not out here slinging products, but Revolution is actually heartworm prevention for cats and flea prevention in cats, and it is a topical that I actually like topicals in cats because cats are sneaky when it comes to pills. They're not as easy to fall for, you know, a pill as a dog, and it's a monthly preventative that really, really works for these guys. Does that cat going outside, or is he staying inside?
No, it's basically an indoor cat. And so I think what the dogs do is they occasionally go outside and
bring them in.
Bring them in. And again, the dogs, I can knock them off the dogs, but the cat just can't lick them, so to speak.
What are you using for the dogs, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I've used a variety of pretty much anything and everything.
Okay.
Ranging from, you know, over-the-counter products and just your general tick and flea spray.
Okay.
The dogs are fine.
For whatever reason, those guys are liking the cat. And I would recommend Revolution. A lot of the over-the-counter medications, especially for cats, some of the over-the-counter dog medications are actually toxic to cats. And so you have to be really, really careful with that. If your kitty cat has been seen by, a veterinarian recently, they can prescribe whatever their favorite flea prevention for cats is. And I would keep him on a monthly flea prevention, something that's probably prescription for at least 6 months to try and break that cycle. And then hopefully once you kind of break the cycle, they'll stay away.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It does take me back to the previous caller where she gets sort of scabby parts on her body where she can't get to. And so meanwhile, the dogs are just laughing at her almost. So,
they can get itchy. And the cat could potentially even be a flea allergic as well. That is definitely something that is it's common and really irritating because they're actually allergic to the flea saliva. So one bite can make these guys just itch like crazy.
Okay, I sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Who let the dogs out?
Okay, we are back with our pet edition of Health Matters, and I'm joined in the studio this evening by Dr. Mackey, a veterinarian here in Shreveport, and we are talking about pet health and preventative health and all things pet-related. We have another 15 minutes left in the show, and we welcome your calls at 800-552-8502. Dr. Mackey, we've heard a number of things on the news about transporting animals via airplane, and I guess also you hear, particularly now that we're getting into the summer months, and animals and dogs being left in cars and unattended and situations like that. What special steps do we have to take when traveling with our pets to keep them safe?
So I think with car travel, I think that's a bit easier, than air travel. With car travel, you've got to take multiple stops, make sure they drink plenty of water and have plenty of potty breaks. And I don't ever recommend leaving these guys in the car for even if you're going in the gas station. These guys can lock themselves in the car. Accidents can happen. And, you know, these guys can definitely suffer from heat strokes and things like that if left in a even lukewarm car. Now, air travel, there's so many restrictions on air travel, and it really kind of stinks because dogs over a certain size, usually about 20 pounds, are required to be traveled as cargo. And so they're underneath the plane like a luggage. And that's really stressful for the dogs and for the people, but it's the regulations. And the smaller dogs are able to travel typically in the laps in a carrier or underneath the seat. And so they can be watched. You know, there's been some tragic things things that have happened in the news
overhead
recently.
Bin, that was
yeah, that was crazy. I don't know. That was just super good. Just weird. And of course, it was a brachycephalic dog, which is a smush-faced dog. And those guys are the ones that have the trouble breathing and are more prone to heat stroke and things like that just in general, just because of their anatomy. And that was just some sort of weird freak thing. But what is important to realize and remember, if they're traveling on an airline, I am very limited as to what I can give them for sedation. In a car, I can sedate the heck out of your dog. They'll sleep for 10 hours. In an airplane, I'm very restricted because of the barometric pressure changes and of going up in the air. The airlines are really strict about what these guys are on sedative-wise, so it's hard to be able to really sedate them. The other thing to remember is they are required to get a health certificate for air travel, and that's nice because then we know these animals are at least as healthy as we can tell from an exam, and I sign a health certificate that they give to the airlines to prove that these animals are healthy.
So we have time for a few more calls. We're going to go to Florence from Leesville. Florence?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Health Matters. What's your question for Dr. Mackey?
So I actually have two questions. The first one is I recently lost a cat. She had FIP, and we got another one, and the one that was sick had really just god-awful farts. And now this one also seems to have awful farts, and I'm sorry for that. I was just wondering, they were both shelter cats, so should I be worried about losing this one to FIP too?
FIP, what is FIP?
So FIP is feline infectious peritonitis, and it's a kind of a mysterious disease. We usually see it in kittens. It's an infectious disease that is more common in shelter animals. There's a dry form and a wet form, and in general, it's really hard to diagnose it until these guys are sick, and usually it is a pretty high mortality rate with FIP. And I think that the stinky gas, in my opinion, would be maybe more likely to be some sort of intestinal parasite. Cats can get coccidia really commonly, and coccidia is a parasite that's spread a lot in shelters, and they get nasty diarrhea and nasty, nasty gas. And so because both these cats are shelter cats, I'd be suspicious that we may have a positive intestinal parasite problem. So I would have that cat's poop check. So take a poop sample in and have your veterinarian look at it. With a shelter cat, is there always a concern potentially of especially a young cat for having FIP? Yeah, it's not a common disease, thankfully, but it is something that's scary. And like you live through, it's pretty deadly. But I would be more concerned about parasites for that kitty cat. As long as you're not seeing any respiratory signs or any other symptoms, first thing I would do is have that kitty cat's poop checked. Is it a kitten? It's a young cat?
She's a kitten. We've had her about a month, but she's not like an outside cat at all, so I didn't think it was a parasite.
Yeah, coming from a shelter, though, those guys definitely can have parasites. And the good thing about that, if it's a parasite, it's very easily treated. Now, the other thing is it could be some sort of diet sensitivity or something like that, but coming from a shelter, I would highly recommend a fecal sample, as to put it bluntly. We like to call it intestinal parasite sampling, but bring a sample into a veterinarian, and honestly, you don't even have to have an exam to do that. But the bad news is if we get a positive fecal, then I have to see your pet to establish a relationship to prescribe a medication. But coccidia is really common, and it definitely produces some really, really bad flatulence.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, it's nice to hear that the dogs get a break. They're usually the ones blamed.
Yeah, they usually are the ones to blame.
Honey, it was the cat, I swear. thank you so much for your call. I hope your cat lives a healthy, long life. We're going to move on to Maria.
Yes. Hello.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome to Health Matters. What is your question for Dr. Mackey?
So I have a small dog that was a stray, and we adopted her last year, and she has injured her, I think I'm saying it right, cruciate ligament.
Okay.
Is that right? On her back hind leg, on her knee. So I was wondering, and we're trying supplements and kind of trying to keep her more sedentary, and we're working on her weight too, because that's an issue. Do you have any specific recommendations for non-surgical, healing?
Yes. So you said small dog. How small?
I'm pretty sure she's overweight, but she's about 15 pounds.
Okay, and what kind of dog is she again?
She's a poodle mix.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly what she is.
So tell me this cruciate diagnosis, did that come specifically from a veterinarian?
Yes.
Okay. So a couple of things with knee injuries in dogs. Usually in small dogs like her, it's more common to see patella luxation, which is your kneecap is popping in and out because of the groove of their bone at the area of the stifle, or the knee isn't deep enough and the patella can pop in and out. And that can cause some lamenesses in our small dogs. But they also can definitely get cruciate disease. So cruciate disease in dogs, liken it to ACL tears in football players. So the cruciate ligament is a stabilizing ligament of the knee joint, and they can have partial tears of that ligament or complete tears of that ligament. And complete tears usually are surgical, no matter what. But a couple of good recommendations for you. Anti-inflammatories are really important. There are definitely lots of different ones out there that are prescription and approved for dogs. You don't want to use people anti-inflammatories. People anti-inflammatories are toxic to dogs, but there are definitely a couple of different approved anti-inflammatories that would really help. Cage rest, and I mean strict cage rest. So we're talking 8 to 12 weeks sometimes of cage rest for these guys. Joint supplements can definitely help. The other thing that's really cool, and not every veterinary clinic has this, I'm spoiled at Town South, is therapeutic K-laser. I think we talked about it a little bit last time, where it's a really cool different modality instead of meds or surgery. Therapeutic K-laser works to decrease inflammation and increase blood flow to whatever injured area. And I've seen some dogs that didn't get better with medical management that actually got much better with K-laser therapy. We recommend a series of 6 K-lasers, two a week for 3 weeks. We use them for knees. We use them for backs. We can use K-laser for almost anything, but definitely for a cruciate injury that you're hoping that isn't surgical, I think K-laser therapy is something that's really great. And I'm not fussing you, but try and get some weight off that kiddo, because the weight is as important as anything with these knee injuries.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing we're struggling with, because we're trying to, you know, keep her sedentary.
Right. It's a tough, you know, it's hard. Yeah. I have dogs that go through heartworm treatment, and it's really important to be really restricted when you go through heartworm treatment. Then I fuss at them because these dogs gain weight a lot of times. And so it is hard. But here's what I tell people, and I'm a big proponent of dietary control. I can tell you my own chocolate lab is almost 13 years old, and even my husband says I'm mean to her about how much food I feed her, and because she's constantly starving, but she is at an optimal weight and it looks great at 13 years old. And I'm going to be honest and say she gets little to no exercise, because I work a ton and so does my husband. And so it can be done with just dietary control. Be really good about your treats. Be really good about no people food at all. Use a low calorie, just good quality over the counter, and measure that food. Don't leave the food out to free feed. What food are you feeding?
We have, I'm not exactly sure what the name of it is. I know it has, it's a higher protein, doesn't have a lot of additives in it.
Okay.
And stuff like that, because we're trying to restrict her.
Okay.
My other dog doesn't like it too much. doesn't like to be restricted, but they both enjoy the food, and
good.
She doesn't seem as hungry. And we are restricting it. I don't generally pick it up, but, you know, we give them a certain amount once a day. And
okay.
They seem to be doing okay with it, but maybe I should pick it up.
Yeah, I tend to recommend breakfast and dinner time. Measure out a specific amount. If your dog's 15 pounds and probably optimal weight is maybe 12, I'm just guessing, then I would say, this sounds mean, a quarter cup twice a day of a low-calorie food, and that'll get the weight off of her. They're not driving themselves to Taco Bell at midnight like people do, so you control it. And if you get some weight off, it'll really help with that knee.
Okay, great. Wonderful.
Thank you so much for
your
call. Thank you. So we are coming to towards the end of our...
Man, the phone calls are fun.
I know. Darn. I wish they had come earlier. We love hammering the calls. But unfortunately, we are running out of time. But I do want to thank you, Dr. Mackey, for coming.
Thank you for having me again.
And again, you're at Town South.
Town South.
So how would someone get in touch with you if they
Website, townsouthah.com. We are located at 2407 East 70th. We are the Big Blue Roof. We've been there for a long, long time. Dr. Catherine McFadden owns the clinic, and we've been there for a long time. I've been there almost 7 years with my associate vet, Dr. Leah Hunter, and we'll be happy to see you guys anytime.
Okay, thank you. Well, this has gone very quickly. We'll look forward to having Dr. Mackey back again. Thank you again for coming and joining us. Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or a health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Views expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily express those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or staff. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The production is Renee Moran, and phone assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Derleth, Tim Snell, and Henry Edwards. Production of Health Matters is made possible in part by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters, where the topic will be the mental health edition, specifically autism. I'm Dr. Sanford Katz. Thank you for joining us this evening.